From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you being with us. Are there any days that the Lord makes that people say, oh, you say that every time? I say, yeah, because every day, I mean, sometimes it's foggy coming in here. Sometimes it's going to be 105. Sometimes it's pouring rain. Occasionally, once in a great while, there's some thunder or lightning or something. Lord waking you up. But the only thing I miss, my wife says she really misses. I don't miss it because I've never had it, but snow. My wife's from Montana. She misses the snow. My mom was from North Dakota. She said, I miss the winter. I miss winter. She said, yeah, it was cold, but the sun was always shining because it's a relatively dry area, you know, and sure, they'd get the snowstorms, but they don't get them like we get them in the Sierra. And then it's the only thing my wife says she misses about living in California is snow. And you think, boy, a lot of people, they want to get away from the cold. They want to get away from the snow, but nope. Anyway, every day is the beautiful day the Lord has made, and you never know what the good Lord has around the corner. Lots of good surprises. It's all good news. So just trust in the Lord that it's going to be a great day. Jane Lee, God's Heart and Hands Ministry.
Thank you. It's great
to be
here.
Now off my soapbox.
You're talking about a soapbox of optimism and depending on the Lord. And you're right. And I'm thinking every day is a new start.
Yeah.
Right? Every day is another, see what the Lord's going to bring. And it can be a lot of fertilizer. That's what I call it. A lot of difficulty, a lot of challenge. But the best gardens have the most fertilizer. And through those crises and difficulties and things that stretch us and pull us to our limit, if we look, there are some phenomenal things. And this is not to make it lighthearted, because God knows I've been dragged through a keyhole more than once. But I have to hold on to that. Isn't that what Satan wants? Is just to have us give up that one last time? Just stay down. Stay down.
Yeah. And
no, I'm going to keep turning it over to him.
Every day I wake up, I said to the kids too, you know, is, hey, if you're here today, you know, you went to bed, you went to sleep, you trusted God to get you through the night, mm-hmm. and here you are waking up, and yeah, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that, and maybe you're a little grouchy, or you're going to be late for school. We have not solved that, and our oldest is now 18, and then 17, 16, and 15. So we have a ninth grader, a junior in high school, a senior in high school. Ninth grader, so it's a freshman in high school, except they call it junior high in our hometown, and then a freshman in college. And I'm thinking, you know, we can't solve that early morning thing. It's like
chaos.
You just go, if you just get up 10 minutes earlier, we could just, you know, you could hear the angels singing, but no,
right.
It's like, no, I'm gonna sleep and toss and turn to the very last second,
right.
And then I'm gonna race. And did you brush your teeth? Well, I did 3 days ago.
Did you brush your
teeth?
Yeah, you know,
they're halfway out the door.
Wow.
And, you know, did you brush your teeth? You know, oh, we haven't solved that, but.
But can I offer too that with that, like you just said, you can't. We all have those things, and we don't talk about them enough. We have those things, and I've come to understand that possibly we're not going to, but that's what, if we keep it in perspective, that's what keeps us humble.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'm never going to be good at that.
Yeah.
Wow. So when I am good at something, like I'm really good at tutoring math, that's the balancing.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I'm good. And always being late in the morning doesn't mean I'm wrong or bad,
right.
Or less. So it helps me to keep in balance the labels that are put on me. Because I had a parent yesterday, oh my gosh, you're amazing. We're so blessed to have you. We're so amazed. We're going to have you for years. And they're just like, just pouring on the labels. And I'm thinking, but this doesn't make me who I am. That's,
yeah.
I'm really blessed to do that. But I have to remember that, because the other does not make me less.
Right.
You know, because we can always find people that can just like, oh my gosh, yeah, you have to talk to her. You have to deal with her. That doesn't make me less. And we have to remember that, because I'm really running into labels because I work with youth. They carry the labels. They're so harsh. They're so heavy. And all they take is the negative, not the positive. So that small thing that you said, I see a doorway looking at it through the lens of motherhood, of trying to look at the bigger pictures. Maybe I'm not going to, and there's reason I'm not ever going to, because it keeps me humble, but it also gives me the right balance of labels. And that's what we're supposed to do as parents, right? Is help
Absolutely.
Our kids balance those labels, because gosh knows there's so many of them flying at us and flying at our kids.
Yeah. Well, I tell them every day, I say, if you're still here, God's got a purpose for you today. Today, sure. Not, well, he's got a purpose for me when I'm 82 years old, I'm going to be doing this. No, his purpose for you today.
Right.
And you're here today. So thank the Lord and say, Lord, what do you, you know, you don't have to do 400 hours of prayers.
Right,
and all the, just get up in your grouchiness and your, I got to do this and I got to do that and I've got a test today and all this stuff. And just say, Lord, thank you for this day.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever you bring me to this day, have me do what it is you want me to do.
Right. Help me to see
it. No, because I'm not going to necessarily figure it out. I got this one person that keeps coming at me in my math class or
yes.
This one person I'm sitting next to and we don't get along very well, or I'm don't have any friends to eat lunch with, or whatever it is.
Yes, yes, the pain, the difficulty.
There are these little naggy things in your life, or maybe it's something big, you know. But whatever it is, just help me get through it, number one, but help me respond to whoever comes across my path in the way you want me to respond, because I can't figure it out on my own.
Right, right. And that's huge. That's huge. That's what I love about parenting and how you raise your children, is that awareness. If we give them nothing else, is that awareness of that God is using you. You don't have to be a certain age. You don't have to be a certain station or place in life. God is using you. And those things, it can be a growth that you're supposed to grow through it or confront it, become stronger, or he's using you to bring about change in that person's life. One of the students I had yesterday, he's a student at Jesuit, and they had a suicide, sadly, about a month ago of a senior at Jesuit, and he knew the young man. So we were chatting about it. Well, also parallel to where this was going on, this young man said to me that he was so pressured by all the expectations at Jesuit and how everybody's sailing through and he's the only student struggling that he just can't do it anymore. And so I engaged, we talked about it, his parents got involved, so on and so forth. And now he's over it. He's got a couple things have shifted, and because we were able to talk about it. And so I said to him yesterday, I said, pay attention, because now that you've been through that, God may use you with someone else. And he looked at me wide-eyed to in marveling that he would be used, but also not knowing. He was a little bit distressed at not knowing. I said, don't worry, you'll see it. It'll be the head hanging over, the hoodie pulled over the head. It'll click with you. God will show you. But this small thing that you now have been through, this trial, you now have a different awareness.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, the other message I want to get out to my kids, I know I have a freshman in college at UC Davis, and you know, she's trying to figure out classes to take and majors and making new friends and all these things. And there's stress involved in it. It's a it's a dramatic difference from high school, a lot of change. And I said to her the other day, I said, listen, mom and dad are still your mom and dad. We're still here. We're not going to try to control your life or anything like that, or tell you what you can do or what you can't do, or when you got to, you know, be in. And that we'll give you, if we think you're going off the rails, we're going to tell you that.
Right.
You know,
uh-huh.
But I said, but everybody on that campus, you think of all that professor, oh, he's got a Nobel Prize or a Pulitzer or something, you know.
Right.
No, they are all there to help you succeed. That's their main goal. And there are so many so many departments there that if you're having a problem, whether they're counselors, whether they're actually psychologists or even psychiatrists, they're there to help you succeed, not to say, oh, well, you're struggling in this class, too bad, study harder. Or, you know, they're not there to try to flunk you out. They're there to say, okay, you're having this difficulty. Would a tutor help?
Right.
Or maybe you're in the wrong major, or maybe you're, you know, maybe this is not the, you know, because you're signed up next quarter for the second session of this, and maybe this just isn't your cup of tea.
Right.
But they're all there to help you, and it's the same thing in the Catholic schools, in the public schools.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is to help you. You know,
what a beautiful perspective. You just filtered it for her. You just gave her context. of how it all is in front of her. And I think that's one of the most important things we have to do as parents, and why as the name of this is God's Heart and Hands Ministry, is that God needs us. We are the mediators. We are the interpreters for our children. Right. We are his hearts and hands. So you just gave her that, oh, everybody's on my side.
Yeah.
You just, everything just clicked into place for her as she navigates this.
Instead of just like, oh, I can't go talk to that professor. I'm intimidated. I can't do this. I can't do that. And I'm struggling. I've got a paper due or all these things. No, there are people there trying to help you.
And actually, you just showed her that it's your instructor's job, actually, to teach you, not to stand there and flunk you.
Exactly.
He's supposed to help you get to, on the other side of the course.
Exactly. I mean, they unfortunately, the weeding out process happened when you applied to school.
Mm-hmm.
This school decided that this would be a good place for you to go. And now they want to help you succeed.
Wow. And how much we need to all know that, but as parents, is to give that to our children. We're not responsible for their success. How much, you know, I'm burdened to and told that I'm responsible for everything my child does. No, there's a shift of there's a community here, and this community of the college is responsible, and God is here in all of this.
Yeah.
And what a great perspective you're giving her to help her bridge to make use of these resources.
Yeah.
Because so much now we are almost letting our children figure it all out for themselves.
Yeah.
One of the instructors at one of the local high schools in the Folsom area, it was a chemistry course. He said, well, this is kind of a self-study course. Just kind of waved off of teaching, which is just a shock. Just a shock. We know chemistry is not something you can, it's not like math, you know, chemistry is not. And so it's just that this struggling, and I'm noticing how much parents are not stepping up. And going to the school saying, this is not a self-study course.
Yeah.
This is not college. Let's evoke a change here. What can we do? And then we're called to do that. And I think that's one of the biggest things parents face now is this expectation for everything to be perfect. And at the same time, let your kids figure it out.
Yeah.
And where's that balance? No, we have to step in. And parenthood is really being dissolved and fragmented, kind of like an iceberg, just slowly, slowly. The temperature's changing, and so the water is just dripping off. And so what was this integral part of society and given its due is now, you don't have to tell your parents that. You can go do these things without your parents knowing. The laws are changing. And the lawsuits filed against a parent or getting an injunction or whatever the legal term is, you can't tell your kid they can't change their gender. And they're 12, 11, 10. Wow, we're just stepping right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's the hardest job.
It's always amazing to me how frequently the state, and there are times where the state has to step in when kids are being abused, kids are being neglected. You know, those are good laws, and there are a lot of good people working on that. But there are things where, you know, they entrust us to take care of our kids, and they put you in jail if you don't take care of your kids.
And you're financially responsible if they go destroy something.
Exactly. But by the same token, when it comes to issues like you just mentioned, or sex ed, or various other things, it's like, or a child being excused for a, quote, medical appointment.
Right.
And we won't tell their parents.
Right.
Well, I just took one of my daughters to the doctor last night because she got one of those colds she can't get rid of.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, maybe she's got pneumonia. Maybe she's got strep throat. Maybe she's got a sinus infection.
Right.
You know, but let's see somebody. And if she was feeling that way at school, the school would call me and I'd come and pick her up and we'd make an appointment to see a doctor. But if she wanted to leave the school to have an abortion.
Yes.
They could not tell me that.
Wow.
And I'm like, because I would be an ogre, I guess. I would be a bad guy to her. I mean, they don't know me. They don't know my relationship with my kids.
Right.
They don't know that I would be her best friend in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
And the friend she needed in that situation.
Right.
Because a teacher or whoever, they're just going to be all hands off. You know, okay, we have to let you.
They can't cross that line.
They can't cross that line.
Right. They can't even put their hand on their shoulder.
I think that's about it,
what they can do.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, my gosh. So let's say she has a math class in the afternoon, a math exam, and she goes up to the teacher and says, I need to leave for a medical appointment. Confidential. I need to leave. Okay. That's it. No questions asked. No anything.
Right.
She leaves. And I go to pick her up at 3 o'clock from school and run into the math teacher and say, yeah, how'd my daughter do on that test?
Wow.
He can't tell me that she didn't take the test. I mean, he could tell me she didn't take the test, but if he tells me that, I got to say, well, why didn't she take the test?
Right.
Then he has to tell a lie. He either has to say, well, she's doing so well in class, I decided she didn't have to take the test. Or I canceled the test.
Right.
Or she sat in the back of the room and helped other kids. Or she wasn't feeling well and she went to the office and lay down. You can't tell me that, well, actually she left.
Right.
For a confidential medical appointment. I think she's getting an abortion.
Right.
The teacher knows more about my daughter because the teacher is going to assume if she's leaving for a confidential medical appointment and he or she cannot tell the parent what it was for, the teacher is now going to assume that it was something to do with that. If not abortion itself, a consultation about an abortion or maybe going to Planned Parenthood and getting the pill or something. So the teacher is going to know more about intimate details of my daughter's life than I do, and the teacher is forbidden from sharing that with a parent. If my kid got an F in the math test, they'd pick up the phone and call me.
That's right. Yes. Strangeness.
Yeah.
But then going
suddenly
back
we don't trust the parents.
Right. But looking at the root, isn't the root of this situation due to young girls that became pregnant either by some sort of sexual assault in the family? It would be abusive. They would get
some probably that are triggered by that. But the vast majority, there is this suspicion, unfounded in most cases, that if a person is, let's just use the label pro-life,
right,
meaning they're against abortion, that they're going to be some kind of ogre if one of their children that they raised to be pro-life and raised to be pure and not promiscuous and all this stuff, that if they fall off the wagon and make a mistake and end up pregnant, that we're going to treat them harshly.
Right. I thought it came from that very, very small percentage kind of situation. And now it's causing a much bigger ripple effect.
Yeah.
Can we not, in our wisdom as society, find a way to help them that are in that category where it would be, they would suffer abuse if they went home or it was came out of the home.
Yeah, it's
assault or whatever. But
it's why we in California, we've had parental notification on the ballot something like 3 times and it's always failed. I think there are 34 states where it's actually passed and they have parental notification laws, trusting that the parents are the people who best to deal with this situation with obviously it's underage that the parents have to be notified. If your daughter's 23, they don't have to notify anybody. But if your daughter's under 18, if she's scheduled an abortion, the parents have to be notified ahead of time. Not after the fact, but ahead of time. And those are good laws. The same reason the parent should have to be notified if your daughter comes into the office and has a headache and they want to give her an Advil.
I got a phone call from the school nurse.
You know?
What's your daughter doing with Tylenol on campus?
Yeah,
she can't. She was seen with Tylenol. She can't do that. She can't. She has to bring it to the nurse and then get a note. She's taking
my
Tylenol.
Oldest son,
right,
when he was like 5 or 6 in kindergarten and they went on some field trip to the farm and he fell off a tractor or something and scraped his knee and you get the call. What's your insurance number? What's your hospital? It was just panicked. Holy cow!
Wow!
Just take him in and put a bandage on him.
Right, he's okay.
Oh, I can't put a bandage on his knee.
Right, you know, he's like, right. Okay, so addressing that, because it's so much in our minds right now with the Walk for Life and everything that just went on. So while it may have started in that very small segment of the population where the young girl would be experience trauma at home this being discovered, the fact that it's been on the ballot three times and has failed every time, the consensus is there's a lot more people voting for parental consent is not a good thing. Okay, if that's the cards we're being dealt, then we're almost mandated. Let's go with, if you're going to respect the women's rights or the young woman's rights or the girl's rights that strongly, then inform her full consent, full information that she understands.
Right.
She deserves that. If you're going to open the door, if you're going to open the gate, then we need to shine light on the entire pasture.
I think the big fear, and not necessarily with the people voting, but the big fear of the people that institutionally oppose, you know, parental notification, is that the parents might actually talk them out of having an abortion.
Right. You know? Yes, it is. It is. So if they're going to do that, then as a society, because if they get an appendectomy or what you just talked about, your son. All the consent forms, all the information is given, all the possible side effects.
Yeah.
Then we do have to fully inform them. If this is what you're going to do and take it out of our hands, then at least give them the information.
Well, and the assumption is, and people say, and I've heard this argument a million times, well, if you have good communication in your family, if you're a good family with open communication, your daughter is going to willingly tell you that she's pregnant. And if she doesn't, it proves that you have the very thing we fear, that you've got bad communication in your family and that you don't care about, you know. And you go, no, wait a minute. I was raised in, I mean, abortion wasn't the issue of the day back when I was being raised, but I was raised in a very Catholic family. And, I mean, my parents, it was the same. Mm-hmm. They weren't even rules. They were guidelines. They were a way of life, you know, that sex was for marriage. It wasn't just for the girls that it's okay, you boys go do your thing. I mean, it was, we were all expected that that's the way it was. And if I were 17 or 18 or 15 or 16 and had gotten someone pregnant, I would have been mortified to tell my parents, not because they're going to take me behind the woodshed or scream at me or anything, just because I don't want to disappoint them.
Right.
You know, they brought us up this way and, you know, and you know, you wouldn't want to disappoint them.
Right.
You know, and so you would want to hide it from them. Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't mean they were bad parents.
Right.
And it also doesn't mean that I shouldn't have told them, because they'd have been the most understanding, helpful people to help me get through whatever it was I needed to get through.
Right. So taking that, going back to their perspective of, if you have good communication, your kid will come to you. And if you don't, then you have bad communication. That's pulling a thread out of the tapestry. That's pulling up one piece. Okay. If you're going to pull up that one piece, then you cannot ignore all the other threads that you've pulled up with
it. Exactly.
If you're going to do that, then where is the support in society for them to be fully informed in which to make a decision beforehand and after? But what we're experiencing is this very singular, myopic view of it. Just you know, all the things in media, all the women's rights, the march a few weeks ago, women's rights. Women, your rights are so much bigger than what you're being told. You have the right to full information on every medical procedure.
Absolutely.
You have the right, and you are being denied those rights. I want you to be fully informed about it. I want you to know the even down to the licensing of the clinic, how they're not all up to par. The risk. You deserve all of that. Yes, but it's being withheld from you.
Oh, sure.
It's very specific. So you're pulling on this thread and saying, yes, we have to do this, without realizing that you're pulling on everything else with it. And so are you also, if you're going to let my daughter do that, have you got a trained counselor to help her sort through the options to figure this out, this life decision? You've got paid counselors to help her figure out which college she's going to go to in the guidance office.
And you all have to admit that you have your head in the sand to say, there's the only trauma with an abortion for anybody, other than physical trauma, obviously, is what people put upon them. Like, you're not going to have any trauma. And that's just a lie that the pro-life people are telling you.
Some people do walk and so, away. And
some people
think
walk
twice.
Away and they're just fine.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're fine. They think they're fine.
Right. But full information is everything across the board.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all. You know, you have to have some. A friend of mine, her father-in-law, has to have his foot amputated, and but they're telling him all the things. Oh. You're going to have this kind of nerve damage afterwards, how it's going to feel till it heals. This physical pain, we're going to help you with this. We'll have this until you can get a prosthesis. It's all full information to where he can make.
I remember having a knee surgery, not surgery like the old days when they cut you open, you got a beautiful scar and you could tell people it was a football injury. just want to, what they call it, Gabe, what do they call the microscopic knee
laparoscopic.
Surgery?
Laparoscopic.
Or, I have an appendix scar, and my two of my kids have had appendectomies, and it's like a pinhole, but so they were doing the just clean out your knee, and it was about 30 years ago. And the explanation of everything that could go wrong and even the things that could go right and what you could expect and how long to rehab and how to rehab and all that stuff took way longer than the surgery did. And it just did, because I had to be fully informed.
Right, right. And
you could have a knee attack and die, I mean, that's kind of the bottom line is you will have side effects, blah, 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 swelling, redness.
And what do they do? If there's ever been that kind of side effect from the surgery, they have to notify you. It may only have happened one time.
You see that with all the drug ads now.
Right.
They show the people, they're riding their bikes and they're playing with the grandkids and they're doing all these wonderful things. And under this may
fine
cause
print.
this.
Because
any
side effect.
And ultimately, it always says, or death. That's the last one.
Why is it we do it for that, but women are being deprived of that information for a medical procedure?
Yeah.
Why? A good friend of mine is working for a presidential candidate in his campaign, and he is pro-choice, very, very adamantly so. And so when that part of the conversation came up, and I said, your candidate, if he needs to fully inform women. Women deserve that, and they're not being given all the medical information. If this is where it is, then we need to get on their side of the bridge, so to speak, and look at the landscape and broaden their view, because they're being given a limited landscape.
Yeah.
If they still want to make that decision, we'll deal with that. But they deserve all of that.
Yeah, it's interesting because, and I don't know why if the law changed a little bit, but all these ads you see on TV now for drugs for whether they're
Blood pressure or
blood pressure or depression or diabetes or just on and on and on and on, all the different and many of them are aimed at an older population that are boomers who everything's been great their whole life and all of a sudden they got this condition and it's like, my goodness, the warnings are really, and it's almost like anything that ever happened to one person, they're going to list among the possible.
Or in the magazines, it's a full page disclaimer.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the one thing I've never seen advertised, I don't think, are birth control pills, RU-486, actually advertised on television. And I wonder what the disclaimer, may cause this, may cause this, may cause this, because it really is. There's about 40 things. They have to read it real fast.
Right.
And they hope you're ignoring it because they're playing violin music in the background and the people
and
that they're
very
actually
tiny.
Pictured
yes.
are actually having a good time.
Right.
They're not experiencing these symptoms.
Right.
And you don't know, was this symptom 1% of the time or did it happen to a lot of people?
Right.
It doesn't say that. It just says may include. And they start with the easy, headache.
Yes.
This.
And all
or
sudden.
Sudden death.
Yes. Sudden death. Yes.
Whoa, I'm not so sure. They look happy, though.
Right.
But I've never seen an ad for Plan B.
Right. Interesting, isn't it?
And
it
never is. If they don't, because they know that the warnings would be pretty extensive.
That's a really interesting point.
Or maybe they just. Who knows? I mean, you see all kinds. Well, I haven't seen, well, I think tobacco was actually banned from the airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we have any, I mean, we used to, when I was growing up.
Oh, me too.
Lucky
Joe Camel.
Yeah. Joe Camel and all those, right. You know, they had jingles and everything. Don't see that. You do see alcohol ads, mostly on the sports channels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think we've seen any Juul ads on TV. I see a lot of them in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
I hear a lot of them on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the next big problem.
Everything is an echo chamber, as they say. You know, in the social, in the media, where you are is what you get reflected back. So I don't know if it's in the on the colleges and posters or in whatever apps that the college students typically listen to for music and things like that. Certain Spotify music, you know, certain kind of artists, a collection of artists, if then they get the ads. I'm not really sure. But you're mentioning your oldest daughter being at UC Davis. We have unprecedented. Amount of society, women going to college, more so than ever before in the history of our country. Women are educated, by and large.
Acceptance rates at UC Davis and graduation rate, the current one is 60% women, 40% men.
Wow. Okay, so you have a top college here, well known. What you said with the professor that may have gotten a Pulitzer Prize and so on, attracts the best in the instructors. They put forth the best to help these students succeed.
Right.
This is a place that's going to, your trajectory for life and income and jobs is excellent coming out of UC Davis, I would imagine.
Right.
So if women are educated, they can handle the information.
Yeah.
They can discern.
Yeah, exactly.
They can understand. They have a right to it. And they're being deprived. They're being kept in the dark for a reason. And so why not give them the information? There's no harm in educating your populace.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's,
you know,
important.
It's interesting because, you know, we hear this term pro-choice, and yet you can go to most major universities, and I think through groups like Students for Life and Feminists for Life have done a lot of work on college campuses, mm-hmm. of really confronting people and saying, you say you're pro-choice, Mr. President or mm-hmm. Ms. Chancellor or whoever's
right.
running the show, student affairs,
mm-hmm.
you know, dean of students, that kind of stuff. You say you're pro-choice, but what choice are you giving a young girl who got pregnant or young woman that
right.
who got pregnant? We're talking about college. Other than drop out,
right.
What resources do you have for the person?
Interesting.
You've got resources for somebody who, you know, got in a bike wreck and got a concussion.
Right.
You've got resources for all these different things. But what true resources? Not just, hey, nobody says you got to drop out of school. If she can figure out how to pay the rent and have the baby, she can still go to class. Nobody's saying you can't. Nobody's expelling her.
Right.
You know, but for all these other things, all these other student problems, you've got whole departments. I mean, that's what those people do.
Right.
You know, well-trained people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're good programs. But do you have a pregnancy program?
You know, that's a really good point, because having my children
go through. You now give RU-46 at the health center.
Right.
By the new law.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's your answer. That's not choice. It's a single choice.
That's true.
It's among the choices.
That's a limited choice.
If somebody walks into the student health center and says, I'm pregnant, you sit them down and say, well, here's RU-46. Here's how you do it. If you got a problem, give us a call. But do it in your dorm room. Don't worry about it. Nobody will know. Is there anything else? Do they say, you could contact the Sacramento Life Center or Alternatives Pregnancy Center? Or
here's a list of your resources.
Here's a list of people. You might talk to your parish priest if you're a religious person, or you might talk to your rabbi if you're a religious person.
That's a really interesting point, because it should be, okay, if you're going to go for abortion, here's a list of
we're going to be neutral here. We're going to be neutral. We're going to give you all your options.
Right.
Yeah, the state law says we have to offer you 40. So we do. And we're not going to raise an eyebrow or frown or anything. We're just going to lay it all out for you. But what are you laying out? Like, okay, and if you decide to go to term, here's a list of adoption agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a whole list of people who would like to adopt.
Right.
Here's a few stories of people that went through that, and this is their,
here's the
their
daycare
story.
Facilities we have on campus.
Yeah, and I mean, they do have married student housing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and here are all these possibilities, or maybe and here's if you decide to go to term and have the baby, well, we could give you a leave of absence for six
right.
months with no harm to your grade point average or your
right.
standing, or, well, what about my student loans if I'm not in
right
in class? I'm having to take a leave of absence, but I've still got to pay the rent. So I mean, so much of your student loan is not tuition; it's expenses,
mm-hmm.
You know, around just living expenses,
mm-hmm.
you know, travel expenses. So is my student loan going to end? Well, that kind of takes me out of the ballgame.
Oh, and here's how your insurance fits with you having the baby and getting
exactly.
that covered.
Exactly. Here's your
right.
because they offer students insurance, a very, right. very low cost, very comprehensive insurance, a very good program.
Right. And here's some tutoring if you're due at a certain part, like right around finals. When I was in college, there was one of our classmates, she had a baby right at finals.
Yeah.
And so here's some tutoring. We can help you out, your professors. There's the comprehensive picture. There's educating a woman. There is all of, and we've got you covered.
I think
this
if
is
I
all
had
the
a
services.
Year off, that would be very interesting to go around from campus to campus and not even confront. Just, hey, I'm a newspaper reporter here, and I'm working on a book. I just want to know what's available at your university.
I think pose
some scenerios to them.
Yes.
Well, what about this person? What about this person? Do you have a resource for
right.
them?
What if you got a student that comes in and has cancer? Or has a family member with cancer and has to now be a caregiver? What kind of resources?
Yeah.
A medical condition that's now shifted.
The quote-unquote 100% solution if you want to get an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
That's the solution. You've aborted. You don't even need to miss a class.
Right.
You know, and that's that. So we don't have to have resources beyond that other than we're going to give you this pill.
But also, can I offer that if they do that with that list, it should be these are the best clinics. Because these others, they've had some issues lately
right.
with licensing and medical issues.
Sure.
Our job is to just present you, to educate you, because
right.
we respect your intelligence
right.
to sort through the information.
And then are you going to offer, if we do, if they do decide to go to term, are you going to send them over to a nutritionist?
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you get enough folic acid while you're pregnant?
Right. Here's the education.
Yeah.
Here's the education for it. Everything you just said is the full tapestry of the situation, not pulling up on a thread and
yeah.
saying, oh, no, oh, this thread here, this is all there is. No, because it's all attached to the other things.
Yeah.
And women deserve, everything you just described and articulated so beautifully, is women deserve to have all that information. And we'll let them sort it out. They're educated. They got into the university to begin with, so they passed the standards for cognitive development and being
yeah.
able to sort through information.
Yeah.
And we're going to give them all of it. And what they decide will support their choice. And I think the Holy Spirit just kind of pointed out something you'll be doing in your retirement is exactly what you just said, is writing that book. And because that's bringing that's important work.
I don't plan to retire.
Well, who knows? It sounds like the Holy Spirit kind of came through in that comment about, you know, just going through and talking to
yeah.
people. Because it's when we do that, it's a person-to-person thing,
yeah.
that then we start to see, we pull the information together in a different manner. We turn the Rubik's Cube around. You see, wow, look at all the colleges. Some offer this. They respect you enough to give you all the information.
Yeah.
That's huge. And I think that's the piece that women are being deprived mm-hmm. of. That's an integral piece. Because it really does feel like we're at loggerheads in the situation.
We're with Jane Lee, God's Heart and Hands Ministry. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour. We'll be back with more right after this break. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sheriff McGinnis. Appreciate that. And we're with Jane Lee, God's Heart and Hand Ministry.
Good to be here.
We're glad you have a name tag. You know, I could forget. It's such a long name and difficult to pronounce.
I know. My whole name fits in most people's first names. You know.
You know, they didn't. Been here 21 years now. Guests didn't used to wear name tags. So I'm a little worried they're worried about me.
Well, you also shared that you just celebrated 50 years at the
Davis
newspaper,
Enterprise,
right? So you've got 50 years there, 20 years here. I'm thinking you're over 70, but I'm not seeing it.
Well, they were simultaneous years.
I understand.
And I started in kindergarten.
But see, you have the wisdom of the years, the wisdom of experience. And that's something with our aging population. There's so much wisdom there, and we're one of the few countries that doesn't respect it. You know, in China, Japan, and so on, their elders are very highly regarded.
You look, you know, the Native American populations way back
there too.
You know, the elders, the Aleuts, the people we would call the first Americans, if
right.
they were Eskimos was the term we used, and I don't even know if that's a proper term anymore, because but people in the far north, you know, the same thing, the elders, you see that in a lot of societies,
right?
And you see it, I mean, you see it here, but it in so many, and I think part of it is that word retire. Mm-hmm. There's almost like you've given up some sort of relevance. You know,
good observation.
Like, well, you wrote a column for 50 years and now you're retired. Well, that's great for Bob. He's now cruising the Caribbean
right.
or something, you know.
Right.
But you're no longer writing that column. So you're no longer relevant. You're no longer.
Interesting. What do they call it in the other cultures?
I don't know.
That they see it as, now you're freed up to actually help, to guide, to provide wisdom. You're on the top of the hill.
Told me that she was never so busy as after retiring.
I've heard that from many people.
Yeah, partly because she got involved in a lot of groups. Some of them just for fun, mm-hmm. you know, like bridge club or something. But some of them to help people, you know, kind of a combination of the two,
mm-hmm.
and then a lot of the people calling and saying, Dorothy, let's have lunch, and she just didn't. Couldn't say, well, I have to work, so you go out to lunch with your friends. It was great, but it's kind of one of those things on your calendar.
Right, and ageism is a new form of prejudice, so to speak, that, okay,
silver-haired,
so you don't have as much relevance.
I see it, you know, and we don't do politics here at all, but, you know, there's only one there's all kinds of political parties, but we have two major parties. One of them isn't having primaries because there's no, well, I mean, there are a couple of challenges, but they're very minor challenges, if you will. And that's the same way with the Democrats back when they had an incumbent running. You don't have people challenging the incumbent. So the primary doesn't mean much, but in the Democratic Party, you've got 450,000 people are running for president. And I have noticed in the debates and even people out on the stump making speeches and stuff that there are three, maybe four of them who are considerably older than the rest of the field.
Right.
That I think are being subjected to ageism.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he looked tired today in the debate. He looked like it was really a long day for him. They don't say he's too old.
Right.
She seems to be struggling. She kind of had a moment there, you know.
Interesting. They're under a microscope.
Kind of these little, you know.
Right.
I remember during the debate, one of the older candidates said something about, and the other candidate decided that he had just contradicted himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Did you just forget what you just said?"
Yes.
Dementia. Let's think
right.
dementia about
right.
this.
Right. Let's introduce that.
You know.
Yeah.
And when in fact, at least my impression of this candidate, because he's been in politics forever, is he's always been that way.
Right.
It's kind of who he is. It's kind of his personality. You know. He's,
right.
He kind of speaks off the cuff, and then sometimes has to take something back, or
right.
I didn't really mean it that way, or you know.
Right.
And but it seemed like. And even the commentators, he was a little off his game. He was a little slow today. That they wouldn't say about one of the candidates
right.
is, what, 37 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't have said about him, even if he made a similar gaffe.
True.
You know, and I think there's a lot of that subtly in our society. You know, it seems to be the one ism that it's protected by law. You know,
right.
if you're employer came up to you and said, "Well, you're 65. It's time to show you the door."
Mm-mm. No, you can't do that anymore.
They can say it's time to show you the door,
right?
But they better have a good reason other than your age.
So, what's the antidote, so to speak? Because this is how
it
society
is protected by law.
Yes,
you know, but
this subtle thing that you did, that they're introducing weaknesses. They're introducing if someone just takes away, he's kind of tired today. They've just cast a veil of incompetence, literally.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
I don't even think it's the goal. I think people do it subtly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you made innocently a racist or a sexist comment, you would be called on the carpet for
right.
it.
Right. And that'd probably be the end of your... If you can't control enough to process that you've just
I didn't realize that word was offensive, or I didn't mean it the way they took it. I'm sorry if they were offended, but I didn't mean it that way. Oh, forget it, Charlie. You're out of luck.
Right.
But with ageism, it's like it's somehow okay to say, well, slowing down a little bit. Or,
right. So, and actually, we kind of want that because they're not quick on the trigger.
Yeah.
They're not going to jump and then they've got that, age brings wisdom. But I really hope their campaign managers and their campaign staff is figuring out how to change that, because it's not going to go away. That said, I've also encountered many people that are in their retirement years and have been there for quite a while. Oh, you know, I'm not going to be here anyway when such and such happens, so I have to worry about it. And I always say, wait. You have the years of experience and wisdom.
Yeah.
You still need to be in the game. As long as you have breath, we need you to be in the game. Because as an elder, so to speak, you have the experience. You've seen the cycles of presidents and economies and global interactions. The rest of us are new to the arena.
And you know something that I think is very true is you go through that early stage, like they say, anything goes for kids now. Anything goes. They accept everybody. They get don't care. Mm-hmm. You got, you know,
right.
Whatever, you know.
Right.
They accept everybody. It's all those old people. They're all conservative and they're set in their ways, and it's not true. My mom worked at Student Health Center on a university campus for 40 years or something. She saw everything. I mean, she saw everything. And it made her, in a good way, much more open-minded. She grew up on a farm in North Dakota, you know, and probably moved to California with a kind of
the blinders on.
And it's not that she approved of everything she saw. I mean, she's seen people in pain frequently.
Right.
So, I mean, sometimes frequently more than physical pain. Or they're, what caused their physical pain is they did something stupid.
Right.
You know, they ride their bicycle drunk and crashed into a fire hydrant, you know, and they're like, okay. But, and I find the older a person gets, the more tolerant they tend to be of all these things going on.
True.
Just the opposite of what the stereotype is.
Yes, that's true. And we need them.
Because they've seen so much. And I mean, my dad fought in World War II in infantry. I mean, he saw death all around him. And I've never had that experience.
And we need their voice at the table. We need every voice at the table in order to make the best decision moving forward. And so I really do hope that those candidates address this head on, because they're going to have to make themselves relevant. Because it's just a general trend. It's a humanity thing. It's something that's far been going on a lot longer than the younger candidate that said, oh, you're slowing down today. Oh, did you just contradict yourself?
Yeah.
Okay, you're fighting the tides of time of how we've all believed it. Yes, you retired at 55, remember that?
Yeah.
You know, and then 60 and 65, and then you just coasted through your golden years. And then whatever, you sat on the rocking chair. Okay, so much has changed in 50 years, but we still have that collective consciousness, if you will, that this is how the elders are regarded. So those people are going to have to step up and face it head on and say, no, I'm relevant because I have 30, 40 more years of experience with presidents and situations and World War II.
And the bottom line is, we're all relevant because we're all made in the image and likeness of God.
But we forget it.
We're still on this earth.
That's right.
And there's a reason we're still on this earth. If you're only here for one more day, there's a reason.
Exactly. You know. Yes, very, very true. And that needs to be brought out. They have to bring God into it. Bishop Barron, who I love to listen to, talked a lot about the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, of the church and of society, and how they're trying to figure out. He's doing active work to figure out what's bringing on, what's causing so much. It's a sizable, quantifiable portion of society. And I'm going to actually email him or send a message, however it's done, because you can call at, you know, askbishopbarron.com, I think it is. I think it's Oprah, because she has taken the word God out of it, but she's made it saccharine sweet.
Mm-hmm.
You manifest your own destiny. You send them healing love. And listening to it, they do everything. They walk so close up to the word of God, but they will not speak it.
Yeah.
But they made it all just very easy to assimilate. Not much is expected of you. You don't have, there isn't, it's all assimilated and all integrates completely so well, but there's nothing beyond it. And I think that's what's pulled a lot of people away, and that we have to address that. And that's where the elders come in, the people of the experience.
Well, I will say it was a number of years ago now, at least 10 probably, the Sisters of the Eucharist, that she had on her program. Oprah had them on.
Mm-hmm.
And they charmed her. And you could tell Oprah thinking, wow, I'm the most famous. One of the most famous. I mean, who knows?
I think she's the richest woman in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Very close to her, at least not in this country.
And I've got billions of dollars and tons of fame, and everybody loves me and all this stuff. These nuns have something that I don't have. I thought she was going to go join the convent. I really did.
Okay. This is where YouTube's going to help us out. Oprah, Sisters of the Eucharist.
She was charmed by then. She got into the celibacy thing and like, well, you know, like, and tell me about this.
Wow.
You know, it was like, tell me about this. Like, she was, curious, but it was so different that it was remarkable. You know, it wasn't like oh you're weird. It was
right.
this is remarkable.
Yeah,
really.
The difference between them, it's such a fine line.
And like you really believe this. You really believe you're a bride of Christ and the church is the bride of Christ and you know, you really believe that. Like
that's
you know, it's,
noteworthy.
It's one thing when somebody says something to you that is just off the charts and mm-hmm. you just go, well,
can't even connect to it.
You can't connect to it. But when somebody really passionately believes something that's just not in your wheelhouse, it's kind of impressive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, in a good way, as long as it's a good thing,
you know,
and you go, oh, that's very, that's, she was very curious. I thought she was going to go join, but she may yet.
She may yet.
It's
there could be time.
One.
But it's, she... Yes, I'm not poo-pooing what she does or anything else, but it's just noticing culturally.
Yeah.
When you're around for a while, you start to see patterns.
Yeah.
You start to see the larger arcs. And we need those older people in our society too. They have firsthand experience probably of a parent, if not themselves, being in World War II or in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And the younger 37-year-old, gosh, it's all out of books.
Yeah.
And we know we're going to repeat it. We need that firsthand experience.
Yeah.
And truly, like you said, we're all made in the image and likeness of God. It takes all of us, everybody's picture, everybody's perspective. That's the tapestry that God created. So pulling up a thread, that's all it does for us. We need the entire tapestry.
Yeah. Thanks, Jane.
Thank you.
It's
great to be here.
Give your website.
Oh, the website is under reconstruction. So it's on Instagram @ProLifeHearts.
Very good.
Thank you.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
This is Lincoln Snyder, Superintendent of Catholic Schools, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showing that God is over, Lord. Have I been given through Christ crucified?